Let me just start the podcast like we always do. Welcome, or maybe a little different than the way we regularly do it. But we're on episode 15. And our guest today is Leonard Stief. He's the owner and CEO of Foil Club DE, where you can take classes for pump foiling, downwinding, riding behind the boat on a wave. You can see him on Insta at Leonard_STF. He's based in Berlin, capital city, and he's a pump foiler. Leonard, is there anything I need to add?
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all. It's funny to introduce me as a pump foiler, as I feel like when I started 5 years ago, my main focus was fully on pump foiling. And that went on for probably like 3 years. But since 1.5 years, I would consider myself a downwind foiler, as I'm mostly just downwind foiling at the moment. But I see that from my social media presence and the videos I have on YouTube, it's still 90% pump foiling and wake thieving. And honestly, being based in Berlin, this is what we do on the local spots, pretty much pump foiling and flat water sub foiling, more than pump foiling at the moment, to catch boat wakes. It's the easiest way to kind of get a surf in the city, where we are really blessed to have a bunch of boats coming by in the summertime, which is amazing. You guys should come visit us in the summer, as you can catch pretty long rides here with just following boats around. The only bottleneck is you need to be able to pump a minute or so to reach them, and you need to be pretty confident to not fall in the middle of the lake. But besides that, it's the perfect spot for wake thieving, I would say.
Very nice. Gal, you've been there before, right?
I've been there. I don't remember the name of the place. Don't ask me like German names. But it's a little outside Berlin, and it's a lovely place, actually. If it wasn't for the weather, it would be like a very good place to pump foil.
Can you tell us about the spot, Leonard?
Yeah, the spot is at the Winterna. It's a location we got to make an event. Actually, Patrick from YI Foil on Instagram organized it all. It's an amazing spot. There's a huge dock, and you can just start from there. And actually, in the summertime, like the lake you saw from this dock is the Wannsee. Well, it's all on the Wannsee, and there's like a water ski area where people are legally allowed in Germany. You can't just ride water ski anywhere. You need like a clear separation from there to there you are allowed to ride. And this happens to be pretty close to this dock we were at. So in the summertime, this is an amazing spot to go and to catch the wakes of everyone who's going wake surfing, wakeboarding, and everything else on the water ski track. And it's actually still in Berlin. So it's Berlin Wannsee. And this is pretty much our local spot for West Berlin. And then there's also a crew in East Berlin, the City Foilers. They are located at the Müggelsee, which is also an amazing spot. But Berlin is huge, and if I take the car, it takes like 1.5 hours almost to get to the other side of the city. Thus, I'm pretty much always on the west side. But Guy, it's funny that you mentioned the weather, because Matt, for you, if you would have joined us here, you would have said like, wow, this is amazing weather for November. It was pure sunshine, really sunny, and then like 11 degrees or something. And it was just the time where the air started getting colder, so the water was still pretty decently warm. So for us, it was still amazing weather. Now it's shitty.
Is it the same for you guys there? Because I was at the Pump and Grill yesterday in Küsnacht, Lake Zurich. And Zeno, who we had on the podcast a couple of episodes ago, link up here, he said, well, winter, that's the main season for pump foiling. Is that the same with you guys?
No, actually not. So I would say that the hardcore pumpers, or the people who really take it serious, pump through the whole winter. However, there's way more guys in the summertime doing it. There's a lot of people get scared by the cold, which is kind of unfortunate, as if you have the right neoprene, you can just go out whenever. It's just a bit uncomfortable getting into the neoprene and out of it, but the right equipment makes it work for sure. We have way less people doing it in the wintertime. And then there's one more problem. As our lake is pretty well populated with boats, there's also water police. And actually, Germany, the land of laws, you cannot just ride in the dark. You need a light. Thus, it started, I think, like 2 years ago, that sometimes when we were pumping in the dark, the water police came and said, "Hey, you can't, you need a light." And now the guys who take pumping in the winter time really serious all have a headlight, so it's a top light.
You need a top light. You don't need the green and red one.
No, because we are
moving.
In German, it's called ein muskelbetriebenes Kleinfahrzeug. In English, it would be something like a small vehicle propelled by your own muscular power. And if you are that, which is also like people who go rowing or stand-up paddlers, and you're in the dark, or sailors also, you need the light on top. So, yeah, that's now the solution to make it work. But it's still pretty hard, as now it's 16:40 here and it's completely dark outside. So if you have a normal work schedule, it's pretty much impossible in the winter to get sunlight. And for us, or for me especially, the main part for going pump foiling or subfoil flat water foiling here is still to catch boat wakes. As it's for me, it's more fun to ride in a wave than to pump around in flat water. And in the winter time, there are no more private boats on the lake, as it tends to freeze and that damages boats, so they all take them out. So there's not that much more boat traffic. But there's still one thing remaining, which is amazing, and that's the ferry. So there's, for public transport, there's a ferry. And every about 30 minutes or so in one direction to 1 hour, you can catch the ferry and then have a really long ride. So about, like, if you max it out, maybe you could do 4 kilometers or something. However, it goes in the middle of the lake, so if you fall in, it's going to be a long swim. And if you don't catch it on the way back, you have to go, the lake is kind of like this, and then you would have to go into the city outside and back to the starting point. So it would be a logistical nightmare,
a long walk of shame. But can I ask you something about the wake thieving, because I find myself having trouble with it. As I understand it, you have to be pretty high on the mast so that you can really use the power of the wave. But also, it's a question of timing. And I have some problems. I always get, if the ferry passes, I get on the first little waves, but actually the second or third one would be better. How do you teach someone that? Because you give lessons for pump foiling.
So basically, to go into wakes, you need to be quite a comfortable pump foiler, I would say, because the wave brings in an extra element of uncertainty in how it's going to behave. So I just said people in there who are comfortable pumping to the spot and getting out. And then I think one great way to look at it is if you Google just wake boat top view something, and you see how the waves shape behind the boat, you see that it's kind of this triangular point. And from above, you can really nicely see where the waves are the steepest. And the spot, like in the front, it's maybe here, then it's there, then it's there, and so on. And if you see it from the top, you kind of you can draw a line where you ride to directly to the stern of the boat, and through all the sharp, like the steepest spots of the waves in front of you. And if you have this line and it goes through the steepest spots of the waves in front of you, you are most likely at the spot that's the steepest in your wave. Some boats have a shape that goes a bit more like this. Some are more like this, but it's almost always the same kind of triangular paradigm. And then mast height is extremely important, as boat wakes tend to be quite steep, but the energy is just on top. It's like if you ride super slow, it won't work. But I think foil selection is pretty critical, as you just need a foil that's matching the speed range of the boat. And that's quite an interesting topic, because for me, I started on the Curve XLT to really take it serious, and that works quite well. And my record for now is still on that one. I didn't try to push it anymore, but I managed 30 minutes of nonstop wake thieving on the lake just with random boats, and it works great. So it really helps to have a foil that has a nice speed range, because afterwards I went on the Leviathan 1350 a lot, and the Leviathan 1350, for example, can go in extremely slow wakes. So you will always find a wake on our lake that's that's big enough to keep the 1350 floating. However, if a boat comes that has a bit more power, so it's a bit more fun to ride the wave, the 1350 is just overpowered, and you cannot carve anymore. It's just holding it down and trying to stay in. And so nowadays I'm mostly wakeboarding on the Axis 12 or 1, which is not really a, I wouldn't call it a pump foil, honestly, because the low end is somewhat limited if you compare it to other pump foils, but the low end is still good enough to ride in most wakes that I want to be in. And the high, the top end is fast enough to really accelerate and to have fun when the waves get, or the wakes get a bit more powerful. But yeah, when the wakes get really powerful, like behind, we have a few really nice wake boats on the lake, then yeah, even the 12-01 gets overpowered to truly carve in it. So yeah, I would say foil selection is a huge part.
A lot of foilers in Zurich are using the same one, right?
Yeah, I saw some, but yesterday there were not that many people using Axis, actually. But there's so many. There's so many great foils.
Yeah. It's hard to choose nowadays.
But it's fun that you say the XLT. It's the exact one I used when I started. And I used it yesterday because my son is getting into pump foiling. He's 9. And I had to show him that it works. And it was hard work, man.
Yeah.
Like, with the long stab and the blah. Really, that's terrible.
Yeah, it really is.
But we are already full into your stories. But for those listeners who don't know you, maybe you can tell a little bit about yourself. How do you get into water sport? How do you get on foil the first time? How do you stay addicted, or how do you get addicted to that sensation?
Yeah, then I would start from the beginning. When I used to be a kid, my parents always took me to an island in the North Sea, which is called Borkum. For the German ones who listen to this, they will find it quite funny because there was just a scandal about the island where they have a tradition of hitting women. But yeah, weird stuff. Anyway, this island in the summertime, it was beautiful. We visited it for a week almost every year when I grew up. And over the years, there were more and more kite surfers. And back in the day, I was road cycling and then BMX. And yeah, but in the summertime, I always saw kite surfers. So from when I was, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10 years old, I always had this paradigm of I want to do that when I grow up. If I'm big, I want to do that. And then I was fortunate enough that my parents could pay for some kite surfing lessons when I was 16. And I saved all the money that I could get, basically. To buy my first kitesurfing equipment, which was trash, but yeah, better than not having anything. And back then I was completely hooked on kitesurfing. But yeah, kitesurfing for me was always, I lived 300 kilometers away from the shore in Berlin, or maybe 230 if you go in a straight line, but it's a 3-hour car drive mostly. So yeah, I had to go to the shore because in Berlin, the wind is extremely gusty, as no matter where it comes from, it comes over the forest or the city. So it's always going anywhere, and it's not fun to go kitesurfing here. But yeah, I had to dream of getting better at kitesurfing and progressing and everything. And so after I finished school, 3/4 of a year later, I went to Rhodes as a kitesurfing instructor. And yeah, I was there for, I think, 7 months, maybe, roundabout, and for teaching kitesurfing. And there was the first kite foil. And I saw a few videos of foilers before, and there was a video out of a guy pump foiling from wave to wave. And I thought, that's amazing, I want to do that, but it was way too expensive. But then on Rhodes, there was this kite foil, and a nice, really nice guy, Mike, told me how to kite foil, basically. And when I came to Rhodes, I was really shitty at kiting. So I could barely jump and hold my height. And after Rhodes, I was quite good, I would say. But the interesting thing was that during the day where the Meltemi, so the thermic wind hits, I always gave lessons. So 2 slots of each 3 hours lessons a day, and then building kites for everyone. So it's basically a full-time job. So there was no real time to kite when the wind was good. However, there was a lot of time to go kiting when the wind was shitty. And as I got into kite foiling quite quickly, I could then always go kite foiling when there was not enough wind to do lessons. And this was kind of the gateway drug for me, because I could just go kite foiling pretty much every day, as there was no wind for lessons anyway. And I used the time, as before on the twin tip, I was completely fucked up as when there was wind, there was lessons basically. So I started in the second or third month or so. So I still had almost half a year of kite foiling there. That really shot up my progression, as doing this stuff every day really makes you a better foiler, kind of. And there I got the first glimpse as Rhodes Theologos. It's a nice spot for kiting. I can recommend it for sure. Also a really nice accommodation. So Surf and Kite Theologos, nice place. And they have sight on wind, so they have quite nice waves rolling in. And then I had the sensation for the first few times that I could ride out on my toe side and just catch these unbroken waves with the kite and just ride in them only by the power of the foil, and then just looping the kite and trying to not get too much slack in the lines. So that was basically all I did, trying to downwind with the kite foil, as I just fell in love with the feeling. But back then, my focus was still, I wanted to get better in freestyle kiting. And I thought pump foiling was extremely cool and surf foiling was extremely cool, but this was 2018. And you could, like, the stuff was not affordable. It was just way too expensive. So I had the choice, yeah, either get a kite freestyle nice setup with boots and a few more freestyle sea kites, or start foiling. So the choice was definitely kiting back in the day, unfortunately. But then I realized when this was over and I got the job here again and started university, I felt the water is missing depression kind of growing, as there was maybe once a month the possibility to go kiting here, and going kiting here is always a nightmare because the wind is extremely gusty. Like a good day here is something 10 to 25 knots and it goes like on off, so you get in really strange situations with the kite. And so I decided that I had to get myself kite foiling equipment, because I knew that a few guys managed to go kite foiling here every second, third day, something. And there was quite a vivid community for that. As with the foil, you can accommodate way bigger wind range, basically. And so I saved up money. And then a really nice guy, Thomas, he told me about this new brand from France, which is producing in China, and they are way cheaper. And he tested them, and they feel the same as Moses, but they cost only a third. And he was really hyped about it. And I'm so grateful that I met the guy. After that, I saw the Gong equipment, and basically was mind blown how cheap it was compared to other stuff back in the day. And then I took some money together and ordered the Gong Wise M for kite foiling, which looks like the first the Go Kai foil, kind of. So 1,500 square centimeter, like 4 centimeters thick, so a real break, but it was really carby. And for pump foiling, the Wise XXL. And I think the whole package back in the day was something like 1,200 euros, including a kite foil board, which was nuts to me, because I would have spent like $4,000 on something like Axis back in the day. That was March 2020 when I finally got the equipment. And this was the perfect timing, as with university and work, everything COVID hit. And COVID came and everyone was completely fucked up in Berlin, and I had the best time of my life. As I got the stuff in March, I went to the lake every single day. I was pumping the whole year and the year after that. While everyone had the worst time in quarantine, I had the best time ever going pump foiling and learning the stuff. And also my work kind of changed to home office, and university changed to home office. Thus, I saved like 2 hours a day with going to work and coming back, and same thing for university. I had a lot of spare time to burn it on foiling, which was amazing. And from there on, a year later, I got an inflatable ring foil board, also started ring foiling, as it just makes more sense than kite foiling on the lakes here. I still love kite foiling. It's amazing. You can loop in super light wind with a small kite. You can jump. It's all great, but ring foiling is just easier, because starting a kite here with trees and everywhere is, kind of always a hassle. So then the ring foiling came along. I got better at pumping and connecting waves, basically, or connecting wakes. It's wakes, not waves, on the lake. And that kept on going until basically last year, I would say. And then last year, the whole downwind fiber started, as Patrick, but YI Foil and me started building our own boards. So we shaped something. We kind of copied the Barracuda by Dave Kalama and gave it a bit of a different touch, but roundabout it was the shape just a bit thicker, to learn the flat water pedal start and to learn downwinding, as I saw videos of mainly Candy Wilder. I gotta say, the dude is sick. Like, watching him ride downwind motivated me so extremely, as it just looked extremely effortless and fluent, and I knew that this is what I want to do. As for me, pump foiling was, I like pump foiling, but I always had the best time when I could just glide instead of pumping. And downwinding, for people who really have the skill, looked like way less pumping and way more gliding. So this was naturally something I wanted to do. So I went into that, and yeah, I forgot about prone foiling. I also had 2 1-month vacations for prone foiling, and yeah, I also love prone foiling. And yeah, that's pretty much the journey. Nowadays, I'm mostly flat water subfoiling or downwinding, and the next holidays will probably be, or the next multiple month getaway somewhere with the van will probably be for downwinding or prone foiling.
That's great. Tell us about Juicy, because you just came back from Fuerteventura, right?
I came from Tenerife, actually, yeah.
Tenerife, all right.
Yeah.
And how was it?
Yeah, it was amazing. We had a quite spontaneous strike session, so the wind was looking great, and actually we wanted to go the week in front already, but then the forecast didn't look that great, and for the week afterwards, the forecast looked amazing, and we found quite cheap flights, which is, yeah, ecologically not the best idea to go to a 5-hour away island for 3 days. But yeah, the forecast was amazing. So we just did it. And yeah, we got extremely lucky with the conditions. It was not beginner friendly, I would say, but it had quite some energy. So for me, something like about head high rollers outside. And yeah, I had an amazing time, as I also have a bit of new gong equipment that I could test. And yeah, it was just super, super great to be back on Tenerife. I was there last year already, and yeah, just an amazing time going downwinding, even though I got humbled pretty hard on the first day. But then the other days, the other ones were all amazing.
That was very, very interesting. And we talked to Lucas on the episode before. Again, link up here. And when I said that you're going to be on as a next guest, he said, "Oh, well, Leo, he's here with me." And they're like, oh, cool. So that's very nice. We went through your life now pretty quickly. When you started pump foiling, I imagine it took some time, like the dock start, getting the dock start right. But then again, getting the flat water paddle up, that must have taken some time as well. Can you maybe compare these two journeys? The dock start journey and the flat water paddle up?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, this is extremely biased. I had hundreds of hours kite foiling and pumping while kite foiling. Thus, it's not really comparable to someone with no foil experience prior. For me, the dock start journey was quite easy, as I could already pump from kite foiling. Thus, I only had to learn to jump on it properly and get that going. So it was, yeah, a pretty easy journey, and I had time on my hands, so I could just go every day, and then 2 weeks later, just was perfect, basically. So time played a huge factor on that, but I see in other people, it's quite annoying to get the dock start right, and you definitely need the right guidance and technique to get it started, especially without injuries. It's a wise idea to get some help for that. And then the pedal up journey for me was more frustrating, definitely, as it's more energy consuming and more technical, I would say. So for me, I had the first success, I think, in session number 4 or 5, but on a huge front wing. And session 4 or 5 sounds like, yeah, he went to the water like for half an hour, but the sessions were like, I don't know, 3-4 hours, just trying. And yeah, that was for me definitely harder. But again, I already had the experience of 3.5 years of pump foiling, wing foiling in waves, and it's not really comparable to the journey that most people will have. What I can definitely tell you is that you will learn pump foiling way faster than you will learn this flat water paddle up. It's a different hassle. And for the flat water paddle up, I think for pump foiling, if you're on the right equipment, I've teached some people where I was honestly surprised that they got it after some time. In flat water sub foiling, there is this certain energy to weight ratio that you need, or you're not going to get it out, as you just need to propel yourself forward fast enough. Technique plays a huge role. I would say technique plays a bigger role, but there's this tiny energy to weight comparison just that needs to be there to get it right. And I think for a lot of people, that's kind of an issue. And then also the equipment plays a vital role in getting the flat water paddle up. If you start on something like the Leviathan 1750, which I would not recommend, honestly, because your technique is going to be shit and you will not be able to start smaller foils. But if you do it just for the fun, you will probably get luckier faster and have a bit more fun getting used to it. And also something for me, I started on the Curve XLT, actually, and pedaling the Curve XLT up is a nightmare compared to other foils. And then I tried on that thing the first few sessions, and when I went on the Leviathan 1550 for the first time, it was plug and play, basically just all the lift at a third of the speed. Yeah, so way easier.
But were you able to get up with the XLT?
Yeah. But wow. not in the first sessions. Like now I can start pretty flat. I can flat water start 900 of the new high aspect Gong downwind foils. And I'm working on getting the 750 out in flat. So the XLT is easy to get out compared to them. But in the beginning, the XLT is not easy, as it's nowhere near the lift of a 1350. And it makes sense to choose an easy foil in the beginning to not get too frustrated.
That is impressive. How important is the board?
Really important. So... It's funny because in pump foiling, I think this is paradigm. I don't give a shit about my board, honestly. I have this, I built some boards myself. It's just a wood plank with fiberglass on top. I think if you cut half a kilo of it, it will feel better, but the difference is, I don't know if you put it in numbers, if you would get a significant difference in how much better you can, I don't know, pump it. In downwind foiling or in sub flat water sub pedaling, it's amazing how much a board can change. And the things I learned, basically, the longer the better. Just get a longer board, it's going to be easier. We started on something like 7.0, 8.0 is way easier to get out. Then choose something narrow. Like a lot of people go on these hybrid boards like 7.4 by 23, so it's still nice for wing foiling. I would way rather sit the beginners on something that's 8.6 long and 17 wide, as the stability comes from the mass and the foil. The board doesn't give too much of the stability. And it's going to be way more effortless to pump or to pedal that thing up if it's long and narrow than something that's short and relatively wide. And the last thing is basically the volume. We started on too little volume. I think in the flat water, you can get away with a really low volume. But once you go into the waves, having these, for me, it's like 30 liters above my body weight in kilograms, does really help to make staying on the board easier.
That's very important. Very important to have the perfect setup, I guess, for teaching. And you teach pump foiling, and have you taught as well flat water paddle up? And if yes, how do you get the people to stay on there? Because it's that long of a journey. And I guess they pay you a certain amount of money to take your classes. But then you say, well, yes, but it will take, I don't know, 2-3 months. So that's like a big investment.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the biggest points of the lessons that we try to teach the people to have fun on the journey and to give them realistic expectations. As most people who book the course go on YouTube and see someone wake foiling for 20 minutes and making crazy tricks, and they mostly come with the expectation, yeah, I'm going to do this and that. And it's pretty hard to break the expectations and to give them a realistic journey overview what it's going to be like. And that's the main thing we try to reach, that people just stay consistent and trust the journey and go through it. As if you don't spend the time, you will not get it. Some people may get it way quicker. Some people may take longer, but it's a lot of time. And people need to realize that it's an investment in time. And if they don't invest the time, they won't get it. But that's also one thing I'm always trying. If people come to my lessons, I always have the paradigm to tell them right away, don't book another lesson. Just take the stuff I give you and then come back if you have made some progress. But directly go on eBay, buy some trash foils, something used that's just going to work for the first few sessions, get some time on it, and then resell it again for maybe $20 less. So you're basically renting used equipment if you buy it on eBay and then resell it again, just to get the first few sessions in. And then you can still try other people's equipment before you spend thousands of bucks on something that you're not going to end up using in the end.
If I take me for an example, I'm an okay pump foiler, I'd say. I've been on the water twice for a downwinder try. I have this 6.3 Gong Crusader. It's also 30 liters above my weight, but I would say it's limit from the volume. I would prefer a little longer board. What would be my next steps to get up on foil? Because with the little waves there were at the lake, maybe I fold 15 meters, not more. I have no chance of getting it up in the flat. How would you as a teacher teach me?
I would say depends on your time, depends on your budget, and I would like to see a video of you doing it. First of all, 6.3 is a pretty short board. So if you go on something like 8.0, you will have a way easier time. That's going to be an incredible difference. Then I would be interested in which foil you have underneath.
I have a Condor M. I've tried as well with the Osiris XXL. But with the Condor M, with a little push from a little wave, I get up eventually, but in the flat, no chance.
I think the Condor M is a nice place to stay. We can touch on that later, but I tried it. I really liked it, also for wake thieving. So I would say, if you're already comfortable pumping, I would not choose a too big foil because you're going to get used to an easy pedal up, kind of. But for me, the Cyrus XXL, I mean, I see that there's a reason why it's on the market and why people buy it. But I think it's not fun to use, honestly. I'm sure it pumps relatively efficient, but I don't feel joy when flying at 8 kilometers an hour and not being able to turn. And also on the stuff that's quite weird at the beginning. If the board tips over to the side, and then you keep on pedaling, it's really strange to get a big board in this direction again, a big foil, sorry. And the Condor M, you will be easier to turn it in the right direction again. So I would basically work on your technique and maybe get you a longer board, as you will get it with the 6.3 eventually, but you will have an easier time on a longer board for sure.
How important is the paddle? Because I have this Decathlon two-piece aluminum wobbly heavy paddle.
Aluminum sounds bad. So honestly, pedals is a topic I would not like to really go into, as I don't have true expertise in it. So in my experience, from Patrick has this really nice, I forgot how it's called, the pizza blade pedal from QB Speed or something.
The round ones, right?
Yeah. And they seem to be great. But honestly, for me, I'm on the Starboard Enduro. That's like $160, and it's still holding strong. It still works. It's heavier than a lot of the other stuff, but I don't see a reason to change at the moment. And that's also because if you're budget oriented, if you pedal up small foils, or if I pedal up small foils, and I know for a fact that a lot of other downwinders have the same problem, and you're in this transition from pedal up to riding, and you take a few more extra strokes while you're already on foil, chances are pretty high that you're going to drive into your own pedal. And this breaks pedals pretty quick. So I'm surprised that my Starboard Enduro is still holding up. I can see one little thing forming, so maybe soon I have to change. but I don't see getting an extremely expensive pedal to have the chance of breaking it right away. But I cannot really talk on how much easier it's going to make the journey, but I don't think that's the right place to go.
What about the length of the pedal? Because for like sub paddling, you need a super long pedal, but I guess for downwinding, you need a shorter one?
Yeah, there's also different trains of thought, I feel like, in the downwinding community. For me, I ride something dependent on the foil. If I have a bigger foil, I'm mostly at like eyebrow height. Now, if I ride my 750, I prefer being like this high, maybe on the head, if I stand up and get the pedal up. But I have anatomically pretty long arms, so I don't know if that's comparable. And I see some guys who ride it even shorter. I see some guys going even longer. For me, it's pretty nice to have a two-piece pedal, honestly, because I do oftentimes change the pedal length. So if I would have to fixate myself on one exact length at the moment, I would have a slight problem. So yeah, I still enjoy changing that up. But for most people, just go somewhere here and start off working. If you get too much shoulder pain, make it shorter. If you feel like you need to lean over too much to get the pedal in the right position, make it a bit longer.
Well, thank you very much for these insights. Now we've talked about your journey and we started to touch your job as a teacher, but that's not your full job, is it?
No, it's actually not. To touch on that, I'm actually a sports scientist, but I don't plan on working in the field as at the moment. I'm working part-time as a software engineering project manager. Now I started another major degree in industrial engineering, and yeah, I would like to combine something between software engineering and mechanical engineering, as those are the things I'm currently most interested in, and spend the most time in free time projects besides foiling.
I would like to touch on your story again. You said that you saved a lot of money for your winging gear at the first place, and now you went through a lot of different gear, and it's super important. It's super expensive, all these things. How do you finance that?
So I had the lucky situation that my university is in the same town my parents live. Thus, while university, I could stay with my parents, basically rent free. Thus, I saved while university, while working 20 hours plus my own business besides the university and not paying rent. I could finance equipment that most students couldn't dream of, basically, on the downside of not having my own place, basically. So that made it possible to ride a lot of equipment, not as much as I would have liked to, but to have chance. Then I rotated a lot, and I got a pretty nice deal with a local shop here.
Which shop?
What's Up Berlin. I can really recommend it. And yeah, I got that. And then I'm also a team rider for Vampire Boards, which made the downwind journey possible, as buying the equipment as a student, you don't have 3,000 euros for a board, basically. That's probably not going to work. And then I've always been in the loop of just reselling equipment. So if I didn't use something, for example, I don't have a proper pump foil at the moment. I just sold the Leviathan 1350, and now I only have the 1201, which is not the best for dead starts from a dog, honestly. So just to switch the equipment and to stay with the stuff that's kind of hot at the moment. That's kind of the way to finance it for me.
Tell us a little bit about, you told me when we scheduled this meeting, you told me that it's like your second birthday, something like that, because you had an accident today, like a couple of years ago, don't you?
Yeah, I can gladly touch on that. Actually, today is my second birthday. We celebrated a bit, and this is a story which is kind of a first for YouTube, I think, and I had it in my Instagram story, but I was not too sure how to share it, honestly, and I plan on making a YouTube video about it, explaining the accident and explaining what could have been done better. But as I don't really remember how it happened, I'm yeah on a few places, not really sure how to communicate it. But basically what happened, we were in Tenerife last year as well, just for a downwind foiling getaway. And I had an amazing time, so a lot of really nice runs. And then we had this one run from Abadesh to El Medano, which is basically, it's about 20 kilometers, I think like 18 or 19 or something. So quite some distance. And I was on a quite small board, so 105 liters, I think. And the Gong Veloz XLH, which looking at from my perspective now is, I don't like it anymore. Back in the day, I thought it's a nice foil, but compared to what I have now, it's pretty trash, honestly, because the low speed is terrible and the high speed isn't that great either. So it's a lot of effort to get it out of the water, but then in the high speed, it doesn't go as fast as you would like it to be. So it's an extremely thin profile. So it only has 0.7 liters, I think, in the 1,100 centimeter square region. So it's quite a pain in the ass to get it up. I was already pretty exhausted on the run. It was big conditions. I never had this big downwind conditions before, so I had to go pretty fast. Basically I was already out of breath. I was already pretty exhausted from not being able to stand on the board. It was too small. It was too much energy to get it up. So my heart rate, if I look at the tracking, was 160 or above something. And that's not a nice headspace to be in for concentrating if you're going 35 kilometers an hour. And yeah, basically, I don't know what happened, but somehow I fell and something hit me directly up here. I had no helmet. And I luckily had a life vest, but no helmet. And I think it was the mast or the foil or something. And yeah, basically I lost my front teeth. One ear got loose and I had a cut in the lip. I can show a picture of it real quick for the people.
I don't know. We probably get the video demonetized if we use that picture.
Yeah, true.
I saw it. It's pretty
graphical. So.
It's pretty tough, yeah.
But were you unconscious?
Yeah, the thing is, I can't remember how I fell. I can only remember that at some point I got back up on the board and felt with the tongue that there was blood everywhere and the teeth were missing and was a really shitty feeling. But the worst part about it is this was like 2.5 kilometers offshore. And that's a pretty shitty place to be and lose blood and have the thought of if I go unconscious, I'm probably going to die. And so I tried to conserve as much energy as possible and just paddle back to the shore. And I tried to call the Apple Watch, the Notruf. I'm not sure.
Emergency, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't work. Then I tried to send my location to the group so that the group could get a boat for me or something because I had, like, I was in a quite a chill place because I thought I can breathe normally. I'm not in panic mode, but I knew that I'm in big danger if I go unconscious or if I don't know. There's also hammerhead sharks, and if you lose a lot of blood, that's not good. And my main, because it was really bloody, and my main concern was losing too much blood and getting unconscious, basically. And then I paddled back for, I don't know how long, honestly, but 2.5 kilometers is quite a way.
Without getting on foil?
No, just lying on the board and like this, because I thought if I would have gotten on foil, it would have maybe been better, but I would have had to...
You might fall again.
Yeah, not fall again, and especially not lose energy fucking up your pedal ups. So if I would have lost a few pedal ups, I don't know what would have happened. And yeah, then I had the shitty get out also. So if you're in El Medano, never come out directly in front of the harbor. It's just big stones, and if there's 2 meter waves crashing on them, it's a place you don't want to be in with a huge board attached to you. But everything went fine, luckily. And then I got out and... Raul and Patrick could pick me up and drive me to the hospital, fortunately. And then I had a lot of luck in the hospital in Tenerife, as there was this cosmetic surgeon? I don't know.
Yeah, plastic surgery. Yeah.
Plastic surgery. And she did like a presentation for the hospital. And so she was there, and then she really took her time and stitched my lip up, and the problem was that the lip was it was cut till over the dark spot of the lip. And this, I don't remember how many stitches, but I think it was, I don't like something around 20. So a lot of stitches. But she really took her time, like for, I don't know how long it really took, but it was a lot of time. And then she always took someone and, hey, does it look right now? And then she changed it up a little bit. And now the amazing thing is you can't see it on the lip anymore. It's just like, you can't really see it. And the feeling of the lip is also back. So the first half year, the feeling of the lip was a bit numb. But now I feel like, or at least I don't feel that I'm missing out on feeling in the lip. And yeah, the teeth were quite a fuck up as well. As yeah, I think it's not a wise idea to show the picture on YouTube. I don't have a problem showing it, but maybe it will be demonetized. But it had a lot of shit had to be redone. Like the, unfortunately, I could keep my roots, so the Zahnwurzeln, I could keep those. So it's basically just veneers, but one of the veneers goes under the bone, and then it had to be stabilized. And yeah, I looked like a prototype hillbilly for a few months. And yeah, now it's fortunately all looking like before again. I don't see the difference, honestly, and I don't feel it either, which is great. And what was also interesting, that this tooth here started getting dark. So somewhere in April it was really gray, but it recovered and now it's white again. So I was lucky on that one, as I was afraid that I would have to give up this tooth too. But yeah, at the beginning it was wobbling like 3 millimeters, and now it's all stiff and I can eat an apple again.
What did you learn from that?
Quite a hectic phase. So I learned from it, bring a PLB, like a personal PLB, which is like a safety device. It's like $300. I honestly haven't got it yet for these runs, but if I do something where I think I might fuck up, I will definitely pack it, and maybe it's a pretty good idea to always have it with you. Second thing is wear a fucking helmet. Like, I have no idea why I didn't go on a helmet. Just wear a helmet. As a lot of the doctors told me, if this force would have been through the head, it would have been goodbye for sure. So just wear a helmet when you ride, especially when you're going fast. But for me now, it's always wearing helmet, no matter if I go pump foiling or downwinding or whatever. Then another really important thing, I had a short leash. And the short non-coiled leash, fucking bad idea if you're going almost 40 kilometers an hour. As if you fall, there's tension. And I think what might have happened is that I fell off and there was tension on the leash and the setup flew behind me. Because I think doing a taco at that speed is pretty unlikely. But I don't know. I can't remember what happened. So it's just guessing. But now I'm on a way longer leash. In the meantime, I thought about getting a dog leash to even extend it further. So I might, if I have a design, so a 3D printed design that self unrolls, which works properly, I will open source that in the Thingiverse and on GrabCAD for people to copy it. But it doesn't work as it's supposed to right now. So now I just use a 10-foot sub leash, which is, yeah, you fall away from the board far enough, basically. And then one more thing is, it's downwind is sometimes you get overwhelmed by the logistics, as it's just so much effort to go to the spot. And then you think like, I have to do the run. I have to get out, because if I don't do it now, it will not work. But mostly it's better to, if you're already stressed, just sit down, relax, take your time, let your pulse rate come down. Because if you're up on foil with 160, 170 pulse, from pumping and having to, oh fuck, where to go now, and then you hold your breath and it's just stress, that's not a good place to make conscious good decisions of which line to take. So now whenever I feel like I'm getting exhausted, I just sit down, chill 5 minutes, and pedal back up when my pulse is down and I'm not as stressed anymore. Yeah, and then one more thing is pretty much take the conditions serious. It's pretty dangerous to be a few kilometers offshore. And now retrospectively, I wasn't taking the conditions serious. It was like almost 2 meter waves. I never been in 2 meter waves downwinding before, and I never rode a dead fast foil downwind before. So it was kind of a dumb decision to go on something that I don't know in conditions that I don't know.
And were you alone?
Actually, we started the one with, I think, three other guys, or four maybe even. But they were faster than me. So I had a lot of struggles with balance and getting up on foil. And when I had my first few kilometers on foil, they were probably like already 8 kilometers ahead or something. And that's quite difficult with foiling, because like now in the holiday on Tenerife, I rode on my fast foil, I made like 2:15 a kilometer, fastest pace, which is nuts fast. And if you're not on foil, you will take way longer per kilometer. You maybe, if you're just sitting, it's going to be like 2 kilometers, 3 kilometers, not 34 or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's quite hard to keep it organized with the group, and it makes sense to go with people who are at kind of comparable skill levels, so that you can ride in the group, in the pack, and also share your GPS location.
I have a few questions about that story. First, happy second birthday.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. And what helmet would you recommend? Because I have an old kite helmet, which is too big. And honestly, often I don't wear it because it's uncomfortable and it wobbles. So what do you recommend?
I'm not sure yet, honestly. So what I enjoy riding most is the POC Tactile. It's basically a mountain biking helmet. The issue is that this helmet is not designed to get wet a lot. So it might be compromised if it gets wet a lot, but the helmet is, for downwinding, it's amazing because it lets a lot of air in and it's light. So I don't feel like I have a helmet on, and I regularly forget that I still have it on. So I really enjoy that. But for the safety reasons, at the beginning of the year, I bought the helmet, like an ice hockey helmet, which has like rails in front. And I thought that I would go downwinding on this for now, to just minimize the chance of getting hit in the face. As like the real fuck up foil incidents until now, from Europe have all been in the face, I think. Like, there have been a few deep cuts, but there's the one guy with the eye, be careful. It's hard. And then, yeah, if you get a wingtip in your face, it's a pretty bad situation. So I thought having some kind of a shield would be a great idea. And honestly, the helmet, it feels nice if you have it on. And I used it in the summertime to train backflips behind the boat. And there it worked. It was okay. Wasn't feeling great, but it worked. But now I had it on for downwinding, and man, it does not work at all. Like, you completely use your peripheral vision. Like, you don't see what's going on the side anymore. And then if you focus on something further back, and you move your head, and now I focus on this, and then your focus goes on off, so it's extremely hard to see. And on my first downwind one, I thought I would wear this helmet with the net in front of me, kind of. And the one was a nightmare. I didn't get up on foil properly. When I was up on foil, I could not really see where I was going. And it was just a nightmare. And I ended up almost pedaling almost 17 kilometers on the first day in pitch perfect conditions, on the perfect setup. And I was so annoyed. And yeah, then the guy who I saw the helmet first on said that it took some time, so it might take a month or so to get used to it. And thus I'm not really sure if I'm going to keep using it, because it was such a pain, and I think it's going to take a lot of time to get used to it, and it takes the freedom feeling away, kind of. But I'm not sure, because on the one hand side, I do really want to be safe, and I don't want to fuck up like this to happen ever again. On the other side, I think it's a pretty unlikely scenario what happened to me.
Plus, now with the better leash, you're in another situation, and you might know how to react better. How did your friends react when you came back on shore and you were probably bloody everywhere with missing teeth? How did they react?
Yeah, they were pretty concerned. So I think they were all happy that I was alive, honestly, because it's a pretty bad situation if you just drown. If you get unconscious in the water, you will die. That's, especially if you're offshore, you won't get to the shore. The island is over at some point. So they were pretty happy to see me safe and sound. And the weird thing is, I didn't have pain. So it did not hurt. And not only did it not hurt after the impact, it did also not hurt during the night or the day after or the day after. So I think, I don't know if there was too much adrenaline or something, but after the crash, I was pretty dehydrated and needed sugar and water. But I saw some nice people at the beach, and they also helped me to call them as the phone did not work after the water and that sort of stuff. But I think they were pretty surprised by that I was not in complete pain.
I did really understand the importance of helmets as well. I just got a little bit into surfing with the foil driver, and in an hour I got the board in my head like twice. So yeah, it's just best to wear an helmet always.
I'm probably gonna try Balz's helmet. It looks pretty light, and he wears it all the time, so I might try that. I have another question, because we are already running super long, but still, you talked about Thingiverse before with that leash, like self-extending, whatever. You also told me before that you have your own adapters and stabs that you share on Thingiverse. Can you maybe talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. So I like designing stuff like CAD, and thus I design my own boards and my own stabilizers. And one of them, which works pretty nice, and a few people already rebuild it, is on Thingiverse. We will share the link for sure. It's a pretty easy build. You can just 3D print it. It's basically four molds and a bunch of connecting pieces. And then you can just press carbon and epoxy in there, and you will end up with a nice working stabilizer for pump foiling, which is nice, because I think the stuff is too expensive, and it's pretty easy to, like, a bigger scale front wing is going to be a bit more complex with stability issues. But the stabilizer is, you can just use whatever fiber and it will work, basically. Thus, it's a nice way to not spend 300 euros on something that feels pretty similar to the Axis Progressive 325. Thus, I just open sourced that, and I'm planning on open sourcing a lot of more stuff. Also adapters, as I, for example, I write gong equipment on the Axis mast, which someone built for me, which was amazing. And now I'm designing, I didn't have a chance to check the tolerances and stuff and print it properly yet, but to make the gong fuse compatible with the Axis masts, as like the Axis carbon masts, as I think the Ultra mast is amazing. It's too expensive, but it's really good, and I would like to write gong equipment on it, and to have a universal adapter that allows just drilling two more holes in the gong fuse to use with another Dudet adapter. As I think this stuff should be open source, and people should just be able to download it. Upload it in PCB way or somewhere else and get it milled and sent to them directly. And the same thing goes for boards. So the board I write at the moment, which I actually won the first ever German downwind foil competition on this year. And I also won it on the session with stabilizer. And yeah, this board is in the Shape3D warehouse, also open sourced. So feel free to check that out. And the version 2 of it will be even greater. I have fun open sourcing my stuff, and I hope that a few people rebuild my equipment to make it better. And I would like to see a community where people who are techie and who have the means to build adapters and stuff just upload the files, as the brands will hate this, but I think it should be compatible.
That is so cool. Thank you very much for that. Maybe we can add a link in the show notes. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I can send you the links right away.
And it's pretty much the same concept. Like, I see a lot of similarities the more guests we have. Like, a lot of common points with Lucas in terms of safety, in terms of jewelry and tips to get up on foil. And also Zeno has this open source mentality in regards to foiling, which is great, which is beautiful. Yeah.
We didn't touch a lot of things, like your racing history. Maybe... Well, you're still young. You have a long way to go, or many projects probably. Maybe just to finish up, you can tell us or tell the listeners what you started to tell me before about the foilclub.de and how you're about to change.
Yeah, exactly. So I have the boat there and teach people pump foiling and wake foiling. And it's going to go through a bit of a rebranding, as it's not going to be in the form of a company, but as a personal business from next year on. But basically, if you need pump foiling lessons, a bit of downwind will be in there as well. But just for the flat water stuff, yeah, just check it out, foilclub.de or foil-club.de. And you will be able to book lessons there from middle of May next year again.
That is super cool. Gal, do you have anything that you want to ask him, or do you think we can wrap it up?
I think that we covered pretty much everything. So unless he has something to add, we can wrap it.
Yeah, I would maybe just have one little thing. Patrick and me are actually starting to build board prototypes on a bigger scale. So if there are European listeners here who are interested in trying new shapes and trying to benchmark that kind of stuff, just hit me up on Instagram. I'm really interested in collaborating with making new board designs and milling them in-house, basically. So if you're a techie person interested in that kind of thing, hit me up. We will have milling services available in a few months.
That is super cool. At Leonard_STF. Really, really cool project. And I think you're going to share that as well, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Your stories. Cool. All right. Then all that's left for me is to tell you what the next episode is going to be. We had a lot of men. We had one woman, Nathalie Brugère, was here. And other than that, it was just guys. And I think that's a problem. And the next guest is going to be Anna from foil.Anna. She's the owner and founder of King Wing Foil Center in Perth, Australia. She's incredible. What she does in the waves, she shows that on Instagram, is incredible. And we are going to talk about her story, about what being a woman in that man's dominated world is. So stay tuned for that. If you like our episodes of Up on Foil, consider helping us out on Patreon. Link is in the show notes as well. Thank you very much, Leon, for coming on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And see you guys in the next one. Cheers.
Bye-bye.